Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. I know my voice sounds different, but it's the aftermath of, I hope it's an aftermath, of a little cold and a little laryngitis and a little too much partying, I think. But Pedro.
Yes.
Didn't we have a great time in Lima, Peru?
We sure did. Our very first time in Peru. We spent 9 days in the vibrant capital city of Lima. And we were at several special events. We ate at least probably 12, if not 14, of the best restaurants in Lima. And we're bringing you interviews with the chefs of many of those. So it was an exciting time, and it was Lima, Peru on the world stage.
Which is what
tempted us there for the first time. So beginning off today's program, a particular special event was the first reason that we started considering on heading for south of the equator to the country of Peru for the first time, because the people who organized the world's top 100 restaurants, the announcements of which awards we attended in April in London, as you probably remember if you listened to the program then, they decided this year that Latin America was significant enough on the world stage of fine cuisine.
They previously did Asia.
Yes, they did the top 50
then
in Asia.
The world, and then now
South America. Well, the world ones came.
Actually, let's specify.
Yeah, the world ones came.
They said Latin America.
Yeah, the world's 50 best came first, and then this year was the first time for the 50 top in Asia, and the first of the 50 top restaurants in Latin America, which is of course you know. Because you're unlike Dan Quayle, you know that they don't speak Latin there.
Ah.
It actually starts at the border of Mexico and the United States, and then goes all the way south to the very tip of Tierra del Fuego, at the bottom of Argentina and Chile. So restaurants in that whole area were eligible to participate. The jurying system is a little bit different than the one they use for the top 50, but I can assure you that it's a big panel, and they certainly know what they're doing. And they know how to run an event as well.
Oh, it was so beautifully organized. And we have to thank the people from Prom Peru for really organizing it for us. And when we decided to go, we were going for the 50 best. And it turns out there were four major food events
all going on.
One after the other.
One after the other. So,
right.
But the first evening, anyway, The first of our celebratory evenings,
which was magical,
was at Lima's absolutely delightful, charming, however you describe it, country club hotel, set with a reception in the courtyard, and the events themselves in a large auditorium next door, and we were comfortably ensconced in the press room because there were no seats left for mere members of the press to be able to actually sit there
right.
And listen to the awards being handed out. And there was much excitement in the room. From 50 on down to 1, everybody was cheering and hollering and saying how great it was they got a place in the top 50. And thanks to the people who were helping organize the event, we actually got to talk to a few of the leading contenders right afterwards, and please understand, these were interviews conducted in very difficult circumstances, as you'll be able to tell from the amount of background noise.
There was a lot of noise.
There's a lot of background noise, a lot of background music going on.
Yeah, my best new friend was the DJ from Brazil.
Oh, right. Yes, yeah. Well, he was helping to contribute to the background noise. But anyway, coming up for you, the four of the award winners that we were able to catch up with in this dynamic, shall we say, environment. Gaston Acurio, who's a great leading light in the whole of Latin America, but especially in Peruvian cooking, with several restaurants in Lima, several more in South America, and probably about a dozen around the world, with a new one scheduled to open in Chicago?
Yes, it's already opened.
That one's open. So
it's opened and beautifully received, he said.
But he's opening in London. He has a restaurant already in London, and he's opening
another
one in partnership with somebody else who's in our first set of interviews.
Yes.
But in this first segment of today's program, we're going to bring you Gaston Acurio, who was not only won the Distinguished Something or Other Award for his service to fine dining in Latin America, but he also placed number one for his restaurant.
Not a shabby show.
Number one for his name restaurant, Astrid, named after his wife, Astrid and Gaston. And he was also in the top 50 for another restaurant that we ate at during our visit, number 15 for a wonderful cevicheria called La Mar.
Which we loved.
That's where we had the 3.6 kilogram fish for a party of nine of us. Yeah,
that was a big fish.
We have time. Then at number four,
it sort of reminded me of a Thanksgiving turkey.
Yeah. Well, anyway, hold on. Second up will be with Virgilio Rodriguez from his restaurant Central,
and his wife is gorgeous.
Yeah, he already has a restaurant in London called Lima, and he's going to open there. Coming up very soon. And then Pedro from two restaurants, Malabar, for which he won number seven, and a wonderful restaurant we also went to featuring, not surprisingly, Amazonian food because it's called Amaz. And then perhaps the most intriguing surprise of the whole evening was a Japanese native born in Peru, educated in the United States and in Japan, chef who has his own restaurant in the Nikkei style called Maido. So first up Acurio, second up Centrales, third up Malabar, fourth up Maido. We're going to play them back to back, and we hope you'll enjoy these conversations.
Are you the father of Peruvian cuisine? No! Tell me what you are.
Absolutely not. We received, my generation of chefs in Peru, we received a treasure that was created for thousands of years, but was hidden in the last 300 years because we used to be a colony. Now, through food, chefs, we understand that we're recovering our freedom, our emotional freedom. We're telling the world that we are not only a country that exports commodities, we export creativity, emotions, concepts, and Peruvian food is one of them, just one of them. And we're part of a movement, farmers, fishermen, chefs, from fine dining, from traditional restaurants, street food vendors, together, not in a vertical relation, in a horizontal relation, where we believe that we have a kind of a mission.
You have restaurants all over the world, it seems. We've been to several.
Those are embassies. They're not restaurants. We're sharing with the world our culture.
And what about your school?
And the school is part of the responsibilities we have. There is so much creativity in Peru, in every aspect. So chefs must do, in our job, cooking schools, where the creativity could be loose because the good education can't arrive there.
Is there a spark that made you wake up because you were suddenly on the scene and you put every piece of not just Peru but South America cooking on the map?
When we arrived, what we found is what we found all over the world between the community of chefs. Vanity, ego, people don't trusting each other. So we try to build a strong relation between everybody. And that's a first step if you want to dream something else. The moment where we joined everybody between a family with dreams, with responsibilities, everything became very easy. And now we are starting the new moment. We already worked for this Peruvian food known all over the world. Now the next level is to prove that we can make lives of the people happier by sharing with our culture.
Now you have established a brotherhood across the continents. Are you getting ready now? You have a start of having some sisters involved in your brotherhood.
Of course, that's going to happen. we are kind of preparing the field. The most amazing stories are going to be written by the next generation. They're preparing to be better than us, and they will be.
We've been following the career, actually, is it Virgilio or Virgilio?
Or Virgilio or Virgilio. I prefer Virgilio.
That's Espanol, say. Virgilio Martinez, and you have a restaurant in Lima called Central, and you have restaurants in London?
Yes, I have a restaurant in London called Lima.
Which I understand is a fabulous Peruvian restaurant, which we will go to next trip to London. And you are the esteemed number four, numero cuatro, see, of the top 50 in Latin America. And you are the rising star, as I understand it. All that, and you're very cute.
Oh, thank you so much. Come on. Yeah. I'm getting red. I mean. Oh yeah, we've been working a lot in the last 4 years with the restaurant with Central, and we opened Lima, London 1 year ago. Since then, I've been like very focused on Central in Peru. So this is home, what I call Central, and yeah, we are very happy with the results.
Now, I mean, I've read about you. You're getting a lot of ink, as I would call it, publicity, because you are, I guess, viewed as a rising star.
Yeah, it could be something like that. I wouldn't say a rising star. I'm 36 years old. I mean, like, I think...
That's very old.
I think there is a lot of guys, well, actually very young guys, working a lot and doing things very amazingly. And yeah, I think I could be one of these racing stars from Peru and Latin America.
Yeah, I mean, you are the missionary, I mean, right out front for Peruvian cuisine, which is the hot cuisine on the international scene right now, I think.
Well, that's a lot of commitment, and yeah.
Now we've been in Peru several days, but we haven't been to Central yet. But while we have you with us, talk to us about what's on the menu at Central.
We have a menu that we call Alturas, which means something like altitudes, and where we play and we do a long tasting menu, and we talk about different ecosystems, and each dish is coming from, you know, each part of the Amazon, the Andes, the coast, the sea. So we just want to do like kind of an honor to our diverse territory.
Now you've cooked in a number of very famous kitchens, for example, in Spain, España.
Yeah, actually, I was I spent a few years in Spain. I went to Santi Santa Maria's restaurant, which was amazing.
R.I.P.
Yeah,
and then closed now.
Oh yeah, they've closed. I mean, it was a fantastic experience because it was a huge restaurant in a small city, a small town, and the product was amazing, and yeah, it was a good learning. Then I used to work with Alberto Chicote in Madrid, and then, I did a brief, I opened Astrid Gaston in Madrid as well. But then I moved to London and New York and some other countries, and I was just...
Where in New York were you cooking?
At Lutez.
That's very traditional for you, no?
Yeah, it's when I speak to my colleagues that I was working at Lutez, they don't believe because it was very very classic. But I really believe on the basics, and I had having Andres Solnier there was like wow for me, and you know, for my learning. And now I can apply, I can use this classic way of seeing things.
And what happens next? You're bursting onto the scene with the Lima cuisine. What happens next?
We just created a group called Mater Iniciativa, and our goal is to register products that are unknown in the Andes, in the Amazonia. And it's a multidisciplinary group. We go with biologists, anthropologists, people very related to any type of expression of arts, cooks, and what we do is work on that. And since we had this a year ago, now we are having tremendous success having new products and focusing our food on these products. So I think that's kind of the heart of our cuisine now, Mater Iniciativa, which give us time to develop new trends, new techniques, and of course to get to know new products and new people, because you see a product, but behind this product there is a producer, and there's a cultural, and there's a whole group of people, community.
They're taking you away from me. I want to talk to you for 2 more hours, if we could schedule that later.
Oh, yeah, it would be awesome.
Okay. Now, we had the most amazing experience, actually. The name of your restaurant, Amaz, is amazing, is it not? And we're going to be talking Pedro Miguel. It's Italian last name,
Schiaffino.
Which is in the distant past, Italiano.
Yeah, it's we are like, I don't know, 8th generation of Italian migrants in Peru, so yeah.
Now, we've been to one of your 2 restaurants in Lima, which is Amaz, which you're going to tell us about. And then we're going to go to your other restaurant as well, Malabar, which was recommended to us by our Peruvian chef restaurateur in Oregon, Portland, Oregon. And so it's very complicated and international. Let's start with, what was our experience today at Amaz? We had Amazonian ingredients, which are very hot, and I knew nothing about any of it. Tell us about what your goal is with that restaurant.
Now, Amaz was born a year ago. We opened doors a year ago, and we started. It's the result of a long process, because we started with Malabar 9 years ago, and
which we do in a couple of days.
Exactly. And in Malabar, we start picking some ingredients from the Amazon and working in a very personal way. But in that process, we found out that the Amazon is not only ingredients. It has a history and a culture. So we said, okay, we wanted to introduce this culture and this history to Lima people, to Peruvian people that they don't know. Also, the ingredients are important. And also, one thing that makes us decide to do Amaz is that in order to get more ingredients and to be more in touch with Amazonian people, we needed to have a more powerful restaurant. I mean, powerful that we can, do more of this, you know, because Amaz intend to grow in Latin America and also outside Latin America.
Now, what are some of the ingredients that are new to most people? Most of them were new for me.
It's hard to list them because there are so many.
Now, how about a website where people can go on? Do you have lists of really unusual ingredients on your website?
Amaz website is it's going to be hung. We're going to put it soon out, but Malabar, yeah, we have, and we are making a blog this next month, and in there we're gonna talk about the ingredients and everything, because it's a huge list. If we talk about ingredients, what I can tell you about that is that all of them are amazing, because they have new flavors, new aromas that you will never seen or taste before or smell before. So it's amazing. It's huge.
I mean, I'm really impressed.
One of the things we talked about before we started recording was that 75 or so in the world's top 100, but in the Latin American top 50, you are number 7. And low numbers are better, correct?
Yeah, low numbers are better, right. Yeah, we're very happy about that. I think it's a nice recognition for Amazonian culture, Amazonian countries, and Peruvian countries also. Peruvian, as Peruvians, not as a country.
I don't know if bravo is in Spanish, but I say bravo. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Bravo is in Spanish, and it's excellent. Thank you.
Michu is a nickname, actually. For
yes, Micha.
Micha is a nickname, right, for Micha Hara Tumora. And I mean, I'm stumbling over the name, but I can tell you that his restaurant was one of the highlights of our trip to Peru. Maido means welcome.
Welcome. Welcome, yes.
You have a fascinating background. You're born and raised in Lima, of Japanese descent. You went to Johnson, Wales in Providence, Rhode Island. Then your father suggested if you're going to open a Japanese restaurant, you should go to Japan. You did that. And now you have a Nikkei. Tell us what Nikkei is.
Nikkei is a Japanese Peruvian cuisine. Actually, the cuisine was born here in Peru approximately 114 years ago. It was born as a homemade cuisine. And actually, with the passing of the years, it has become a new trend, you know, in Peruvian cuisine. It's part... How can I explain this? For example, in Peru, we have many, many cultures, many countries that came to Peru. And Peru has been like a sponge, has been absorbing all the information from other countries. One of them, Europe, for example, Spain. We have a lot of influence from Spain. We have a lot of influence from China. We have a lot of influence from Africa. We have a lot of influence from Italy and, of course, from Japan. And this mixture of ingredients and techniques was the reason for the Nikkei cuisine to born here, you know. So actually right now we are making a Peruvian cuisine, but with Japanese techniques.
It seems like a total natural blend.
It is because it has been done naturally. It's not forced, you know. As I told you, this was like a homemade cuisine at the beginning, you know. So it was what grandmas cooked, your mom cooked, and this DNA, I would say it's the DNA of the flavor, has become the reason for the Nikkei cuisine, for the Nikkei cuisine's existence right now.
I need to say that you also add into that a lot of very advanced experimental presentations and techniques.
Yes, we love to, what I love to do is to cook, you know, so I'm always trying to look for new things from nature.
What about your rocks?
The rocks, yes. For this tasting menu, we talk to the fishermen that bring us the mussels and the seaweed and everything, so they could bring us some rocks from the bottom of the sea. So because we wanted to present some whelks, which are a typical Peruvian Nikkei recipe, which are cooked in soy sauce for a long time till they become tender. So where do they seasonally sleep? They live stuck to the rocks, you know. So we wanted to present them in their natural habitat. So we thought about bringing the rocks. It took us a long time, and it was very hard to get them. But we finally did.
They're gorgeous, but every single course in this tasting menu was a surprise and a pleasure.
I'm intrigued because this is the first Latin American awards, and you placed number 11 out of 50. Doesn't it make you proud that you now have international recognition for Nikkei cuisine in Peru?
It makes me very proud, but it makes him like prouder or more proud to have a Nikkei restaurant in the list. I think that there are many restaurants in Peru that are doing a great job. And it's a way of showing the world what Nikkei cuisine is. And as I told you, the beginning is very, very nice. It comes from the heart. And to have a restaurant, well, it's my restaurant at the same time, but I think that it's not only for Maido. It's for every Nikkei restaurant that's in Peru. And I hope many, many Nikkei restaurants open around the world very soon.
But you are especially talented and especially accomplished. I just want to make sure that everybody knows that they should experience your personal cuisine as well.
Yes, what we do in Maido, it's something different, actually. We don't stick to the roots only. We try to develop new techniques. We try to investigate. We do investigation of Peruvian ingredients. Actually, in Peru, we have something that's beautiful. That is, we have the Amazon, we have the Andes, and we have the sea. So we know only, I would say, 20% of the ingredients we have in Peru. There's an 80% that we need to discover, mostly in the Amazon. And in this research that we are doing, we find so many nice and beautiful ingredients to use in a tasting menu that I think that is some of the work we are doing that's bringing a new style of Nikkei cuisine right now. So we play with sushi, for example. In Peru, we love rice. Everybody eats rice. There's a say in Peru that we eat rice like Oriental or like Chinese or Japanese because we eat rice with every meal. We don't eat with potatoes, of course, but rice be in your table every day, you know, at least in the coast of Peru.
What was that dish with the steam? You took the lid off?
That was the chupemushi. It's, yes.
I grew up on chupemushi.
Yes, chawamushi is a preparation. It's a custard made with eggs and dashi in Japan. It's very light and usually eat it at the end of a dinner or a meal. In Peru, since we're here, we try to give it a kick because that is what Peru does. We have the chilies, we have the prawns from the rivers, you know. We love tasty food. We love to give it a kick all the time. So we said, okay, let's do the same technique, but let's add some prawns. And let's do the bisque with the prawns, and let's add a nice camarón. That's what we call the prawns here, a nice camarón flavor to it. So that's what we did. So we inspire our cuisine in the Peruvian preparations, and of course also in history of some pioneers in Nikkei cuisine, as well as in ingredients from all over the country. We like to play a lot. We like to build a story around our cuisine, and that's what we do right now.
This is one talented chef. And I'm telling you, it's one exciting journey going through your tasting menu. I loved every single course of it, and I could go back tomorrow if you would make me all those dishes, different dishes, because I'm sure you have all those more exciting things always perking up in your mind.
Yes, when I wake up, I always think what I should do in terms of new creations. When I go to sleep, when I wake up, when I take a shower, every time. So it's amazing. I love what I do. That's my hobby. You know, cooking is my hobby. It's not my job.
They're taking you away from me now, but thank you so much.
And we'll move on to the next event that we attended in Lima right after the break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. We, of course, did not get to interview everybody we wanted to interview. There were so many stars there, I was delirious.
There we go. Get stars in a row.
Yeah, and of course, one of my favorite chefs is Alex Atala, whose restaurant, D.O.M., came in number two.
That was a surprise, too. Everybody was kind of surprised about that. They felt sure he'd be number one because he was highest ranked among all the Latin American restaurants in the world's top 50, but we're going
to be interviewing him because he has a new book
coming out,
and we were going to be interviewing him probably
next month. Well, whenever it is.
Whenever.
And
anyhow.
We missed Elena Rizzo, who has a restaurant called
Mani,
which is in
Sao Paulo, Brazil.
Where Alex's restaurant is also in Sao Paulo too.
Yeah, and we never talked to anybody from one of our colleague journalists told us was her vote for the best restaurant.
Is that Puyol's?
Mexico was Bico in Mexico City, and we never got near that one. And then the other one that everybody raves about is Pujol, and I kept looking out for him. I would see him in the distance, and we never even got close to grab him.
I actually met the chef, Enrique Olvera, very, very nice gentleman, who was on the program at Mistura, and we were supposed to meet again the next day, but there were so many people and so many things going on, we didn't connect. We will certainly hope to bring him to you via a telephonic connect. Anyway, if you think that the 50 Best Latin America sounds like a big event, and you can tell from the noise in the background, there were certainly a lot of people there having a good time, that was nothing on the second event that we attended in Lima, a food show, a food display that went on starting...
And culture.
Yeah. Going on for days and days and days. In fact, it's still going on today and tomorrow, I believe. And on the Sunday, the busiest day of this festival, held on a beach. Just outside Lima. They said there were 50,000 people there on Sunday, and it looked like there were actually more than that. Imagine that was repeats every day, and they were expecting that they would get more than a million visitors as they did last year. So
it was amazing to look at, even with the giant fire pits They were doing whole sides of pigs, and, you know.
Oh yeah, marvelous stuff. In the brasses.
Brasses.
Okay, I don't know which it was. For which of course is grills, including one that intrigued Anne mightily, which is a fire pit style of cooking, where they dig a hole in the ground and they heat up some big stones in the bottom of the pit with wood to get them nice and hot. And then they take the wood away and they put a whole range of vegetables and things like that in, cover it with banana leaves or palm leaves or something like that.
And dirt. And
then cover it with dirt and let it cook for 3 hours. So Anne was hoping to get a potato cooked by this method, and she was very disappointed to find out that she was going to have to wait 3 hours for that to happen. and she never did get one. But let's just briefly introduce the concept of Mistura. And what better person to do that than Gaston Acuro, who seemed to be absolutely everywhere and is everywhere.
He was.
And then a parallel event going on at the same time in the same location, a culinary symposium.
Which brought star chefs from around the world.
Indeed, some star chefs.
Oh, wow.
Who you're going to be listening to over the next program. In today's program, we thought, well, Alain Ducasse came the furthest and is perhaps the most famous. So we did manage to capture three minutes of his wisdom. So right after Gaston Acuro talks to us about Mistura and the reason behind it and the accompanying culinary congress, we have words from Alain himself. And then after that, we'll come back and we'll talk to you about more things that were going on in Lima. But in the meantime, let's go to Gaston Acuro and Mistura. We met Gaston Acuro a few days ago and talked to him about what it felt like to be chosen as the best restaurant in Latin America. And we have the good fortune to have caught up with Gaston again today. So we have some more time to talk with him. First and foremost, Gaston, you are one of the creators of this food festival that we have been enjoying for the last several days. Tell us how that came about and what your concept was.
Thank you. For the last 20 years, we've been building a community of chefs, farmers, and customers, being proud of our food culture, celebrating together, really united, and using food as an instrument of a lot of good things, promoting our food, our country in the world, our products in the world, as a country destined for travelers all over the world, and finding opportunities in integration between Peruvians inside Peru. So we thought that that was the moment to do something important, to celebrate what we were building, and to prove if we were in the right way. So we understood that we needed a festival where we could celebrate together all the dreams we had, and brought farmers from all over the country to see if the city receives them properly, recognize them, their work, giving the farmers the trust and the new relation that they were expecting for a long time. No? We brought street food vendors from all over the country so we could help them to be recognized in the same way that a fine dining restaurant chef was being recognized in newspapers, televisions.
One of the most intriguing things is you found a place to put this huge event, and we are really on the beach.
Yes, this is a sixth edition, actually. So right now we're on the beach. I think we're going to stay for a long time here because we receive half a million people in 1 week, so we don't want to disturb all the neighborhoods that are in the city. So this is a great place to be. And we started with 25,000 visitors. And right now, just from all over the world, 25,000 visitors. But locally, we have a million people celebrating food culture, Peruvian food culture.
When did you start the culinary congress that's happening alongside of that, which is where we are today?
From the beginning, we knew that we need to bring, to celebrate our food culture to great chefs all over the world, to share with them our food culture and to make them ambassadors of our culture so they can discover in Lima what we have and then go and spread this message to the world. So since the beginning, from the first edition, Alberto Adriano, for example, then Ferran Adrià came, and all of the chefs, René Redzepi is coming today. And the reality is that in 6 years, Mistura has been a good promotion for the world, in the world for Peruvian food.
Now let's change subject just a second, because in addition to sponsoring Mistura and doing all the other things you do, you have found time to build something of an empire of restaurants. Talk to our listeners about where they can find your restaurants in Peru and then your restaurants around the world.
In Peru we have 9 different concepts. We try to put in value all the different styles of food, Peruvian food. In the seafood world we have the cevicherias, we have one. In the traditional cuisine we have panchita. In the regional foods we have chicha. Even in the gourmet organic burgers we have papachos. In the integration between Peru and Italy, we have Los Bachiche. And in the integration between China and Peru, we have Madame Toussaint. And in fine dining and avant-garde cuisine, we have Astrid Gaston. So we try to put on value all different. We have also, all over Latin America, some of these concepts in Bogota, in Sao Paulo, in Buenos Aires, in Santiago de Chile, in Mexico, Caracas, in Ecuador. We have some also in the United States, in Chicago, San Francisco. We're opening in Mandarin Oriental in Miami in the next month, over the beach in a very, very nice place. We have some also in Spain, in Barcelona, in Madrid. We're opening next year also in London with our friend Virgilio Martinez from the Restaurant Central. We're opening together a restaurant, like an embassy of Peruvian food culture. And we will try opening more, because for us it's not a matter of, okay, we want to have a lot of restaurants. It's part of our mission. I mean, we're taking Peruvian food through the world.
This is difficult since I can't speak right now, but you talk about embassies. Tell us about people coming to you in Chicago and thanking you. Tell us the story.
I was in Chicago last week, and I got really, really touched, because some neighbors of around the area where the restaurant is, people from Chicago, these ladies, and they said to me something that was actually an inspiration. No? She said to me, "Thank you for bringing your culture to my neighborhood." What that means? That means that the world is connected. We want to receive diversity to our lives, and we want to share our culture in this world. So it's becoming magic that you could find one day around your neighborhood these small restaurants of different types of styles of food from all over the world run. And for you, it's great to have, because there are like embassies of ingredients, of traditions. It's like traveling to another country, but just in a few blocks from your house, no? Through food. So that's amazing, and we're trying to do that. We're trying to our food culture, because we know it's going to make the people happy, because it's nice, it's original, it's fresh, it's honest, and that's what we're doing.
Listeners, you heard it here first. Don't be surprised if Gaston doesn't become a candidate for president of Peru sometime in the future. I'm not even going to let him reply to that one. I'm just going to say thank you so much for talking to us again.
That will never happen, actually. As people say that, but that's not going to happen. That means that we have chefs in Peru are recognized, not because they cook nice, it's because we're trying to do things for our country. So that's so we have a big responsibility, no? Not to give back this love that we receive, no?
So there you have it, right from the horse's mouth, if you will. And next up now, just a few words with Alan Ducasse.
Intimidating to speak with you, because you are just such a status figure in this whole gastronomy revolution. And you've been everywhere. You've won every award. What was it important about this conference for you to make this conference, to come this long way to this event?
Acteur de la scène gastronomique de l'Amérique latine, parce que la nature, elle est généreuse, que les professionnels y sont là, et je pense que le Pérou a un grand avenir dans les 10 années, dans les 10 prochaines années.
To understand how this country, Peru, in Latin America, was becoming an actor of the global gastronomy worldwide. And for this, I needed to meet with the producers and better understand, you know, the local culture culinary-wise, and meet with the producers and know better about the produce, you know, to better understand the dynamism of this country on the worldwide scene.
How can we experience this cuisine without destroying the environment it came from.
Comme partout, il faut un développement raisonnable et raisonné qui fait attention à consommer localement et puis très clairement à consommer moins de protéines animales et privilégier, comme partout il y a un problème avec le poisson, privilégier une consommation sustainable du poisson et consommer plus de céréales, plus de légumes, etc. Et consommer moins de sel, moins de gras, moins de sucre. Voilà, ils ne vont pas s'échapper dès à présent de cette notion d'être précautionneux des ressources de la planète.
The development really, even the initial development, you know, shall take into account the question of sustainability. So they, it is important that, you know, of course, in the way they develop themselves, they take into account, you know, the health, you know, aspect, and also, you know, reasonably develop and use resources of the planet. Going towards less salt, toward less sugar, towards less fat. We all know that there is an issue with the fish, you know, and the resource of the oceans and the seas. So also take this into account and reasonably use the resources from the water.
How did Alain become the spokesperson for fish?
De la mer ou d'autre chose, je suis un porte-parole des ressources qu'il faut consommer de manière la plus juste possible, et comme il n'y aura pas la possibilité pour tout le monde de se nourrir, il faut d'ores et déjà être précautionneux de cela, et l'accès qu'on a aux médias me fait que les cuisiniers doivent être des porte-parole de cela.
Spokesperson for fish, but you know, for produce from the land as well. I mean, it's very important that we as chefs and cocineros, you know, relay the message of the reasonable use of the limited resource of the. And you know, as a chef, he is very proudly, you know, relaying this message. Thank you very much.
And thank you. You got it.
And right after the break, we're going to come back with perhaps the most idiosyncratic event that took place in Lima, Peru, during the time we were there. So don't go away. You'll be fascinated by it, I'm sure.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
So here's the deal, listeners, and more detail to follow from the person who, I guess, was most responsible for inventing this whole concept called Jolines. So we've had 50 Best Latin America, we've had Mistura, we've had the Culinary Congress, side by side with it, an event, an iconic event, I think you would describe it as, called Jolines. They've had, I think, two or three of them only before. They decided, for reasons that were not entirely clear to me, although you might pick them up from the next interview, that Peru would be a good place to do this. It was Peru's time, I guess. So the idea is that the group of conveners select 25 chefs from around the globe, some of the world's very best, and they get them to come all to the same place at the same time. And the deal is that they're supposed to recreate or create a new version of a famous chef's recipe. In this case, it was a recipe by probably guess who, guest on a curio, and it was octopus in a cylinder or something like that, I think.
That was his dish.
That was his dish.
But then all the chefs had to come up with their own variation.
A variation
of
an octopus
dish.
Recipe. And we'll be talking in another program probably next week to Daniel Hume and his partner Will Gadaris, who did a lobster, who did an octopus hot dog,
yes,
that apparently was very well received. Magnus Nielsen from Sweden went through 200 kilos of octopus trying to come up with his recipe, which it turned out eventually finished up only using the octopus skin, something I would have thought you might actually throw away.
It's a little out there, this event,
and we
more fun than anything.
And we had another chef who decided that his version of an octopus recipe was going to be an octopus without octopus. So the recipe looked like octopus, but it was made out of vegetables. that was Andoni from Mugaritz in the Basque region of Spain. So there was a lot going on, and this event started at 6:30 p.m. and we have it on good authority, although we were not there at this time, that there was an after party that started at 3 that continued until well after 4 a.m. the next day. So it was a 10-hour event. And the organizer,
our colleague Gustavus, looked like he had been out till 4 a.m.
Yeah, well, anyway, we caught up with Andre Petrini, who was the convener and organizer and road manager,
as
he described himself, for this whole Jolinas concept. And I think you'll find it a totally fascinating interview and a fine way, once again, to celebrate the culinary excellence of the city of Lima and the country of Peru.
So many stars, so much is happening. We're going to get a little bit of insight into another session called Jolinas, and we're going to be talking to Andrea Petrini. And Andrea, I'm stumbling over the word, but tell me what exactly is Jolinas.
Okay, the word Jolinas comes from three different sources. Jolinas as Pierangelini, as Fulvio Pierangelini, who is an Italian chef, and he is kind of the founder. He was the first one to launch the idea. Jolinas Pierangelini, Fulvio Pierangelini. Then it also comes from the poule geline, the chicken Geline, which is a rare breed of chicken coming from Touraine in France, and it's a rare breed with a rather gamish flavor, so it's a kind of wild chicken. And last but not least, Jolinas comes from the British rock band Gorillaz, which is a band composed by a rock singer, previously the lead singer with Blur, and there's a rap singer, there's a manga artist, a Japanese guy who draws mangas. So it is this idea of multidisciplinarity and different personalities and many things happening at the same time.
Now, you wear many hats. I see by your card that you are a creative director of Cook It Raw. You are the French chairman, since you live in Lyon, of the world's 50 best restaurants. And, of course, you've been involved with this issue of that, the 50 best restaurants in Latin America. And I love you say you're food trotting, global writing, and trend setting. Very clever. What hat are you wearing right this minute? I would like if you would please explain to us what's going to happen with the program you're doing, starting, is it tomorrow?
Okay, I'm here in Lima as the Jolinas road manager. what is going to happen? Jolinas is started in 2005 as a group composed by five different chefs: Fulvio Pirangelini and Massimo Bottura from Italy, Peter Nilsson, a Swedish chef working in Paris, Luis Antonio Duritz from the restaurant Mugaritz in San Sebastian, and then soon other chefs joined in. René Redzepi, I'm talking in 2006, René Redzepi from Noma restaurant, he joined in February 2007. And also Inaki Aitz-Pitarte from Le Chateaubriand in Paris. We have been doing these gigs mostly once a year. And then in 2008, we came to a halt for many different things, because Fulvio was closing his restaurant. We were, I was starting to launch the cookie throw thing, and of course, the first chefs, the first guys that I called to join the cookie throw were the guys who originally met at the Jolinas. I'm talking about René, talking about Massimo Bottura, talking about Inaki Spitarte, Peter Nilsson, Davide Scabin. So cookie throw is born as an extension of Jolinas.
Now, it says in this literature that you are doing a world tour with these events. And what exactly happens in these events?
Okay, the concept behind Jolene is that every time we decide to do a gig somewhere, it might be into a food festival or any other place in the world. It might be in a restaurant or in an art gallery, in an open place, or in a loft, in an industrial site. We decide of a chef. We decide which chef we are going to cover. The chef, it has been in the past Davide Scabin, it has been in the past Fulvio Priangelini or René Redzepi, he decides, he picks up one of his recipes, let's say a signature dish. In the case of Fulvio Priangelini, he was the first one, he chose the scallops stuffed with mortadella. René chose a dessert, a goat's milk ice cream, a caramelized goat's milk ice cream with sea sorrel granité. Or Davide Scabin chose a veal long braised in Barolo. Once this recipe is chosen, we call it the matrix. We send the recipe to all the other members of the band, and everybody takes a few weeks to study it and to come up with his own vision, his own version. Basically, he has to come up with a cover of the same recipe, like in jazz music, when you play a cover of an old Cole Porter composition, or in rock music, when you make a reprise of an old song by the Stones and Roses, or in electronic music when you make a remix. So everybody is preparing in his restaurant a remix of the original recipe of the remix. And when we do a dinner, a performance, people will sit down and eat many times the same dish, but every dish is going to be different. It's like listening to a song by Radiohead, the original song, and then the version that has been remixed by many DJs around the world. So, if there are 10 chefs, you're gonna eat 10 times the same dish. You're gonna eat 10 times the veal tongue braised in Barolo. And that's what's going to happen in Lima. First, the gig on stage on Sunday, and then on Monday night with the long performance, which might last from, say, 6 to 8 hours, from night till the break of dawn.
Now, is this association, a close association with music, terms, style, covers, the whole bit, is this accidental, or were you in another life a musician?
No, I've been playing a little bit piano, doing mostly free improvised music, but I'm a music lover, and most of the chefs, they're really very much into music. So what happens is that also, yes, the terminology of music is very important. Gelinas is not an association of chefs, it's more a rock band of chefs. It's a hang band of chefs. With a rather punkish attitude. And of course, music is very important. The idea of the remix, it comes, of course, from music, but you can also follow and go to the roots, and it also comes from contemporary art, where there's this reflection on the copy of the copy on the copy on the reproduction of the same image. We could go back to Gertrude Stein saying a rose is a rose is a rose is a rose, and all you can also think about of the most contemporary experiments with artists on the concept of exploring, because for example, if you sit down for 8 hours eating kind of the same dish, of course in different versions, how many variation on a variation can you eat? How many variation on a variation can you detect? How much time before your palate is not able anymore to recognize the differences? Of course, it's a rather rockish, there's a rather rockish attitude, it's a rather garage electronic feel of it, but if you ask me, the direct link is more, goes back towards the minimal composers like Philip Glass or Steve Reich. It's really like iteration and difference and repetition.
Okay, this year, I love this title. It says Pulpo Fiction, Pulp Fiction. It's plays Gaston Acuria, and that's the gig. And what is the dish?
We ask Gaston, hey, Gaston, pick up a dish, something which is typically yours, a signature dish, something which is 100% Peruvian, something that relates to your restaurant, to your country, to your culture, something the other guys can play with. Any answered quite soon, and he proposed, hey, why don't we do the pulpo al cilindro, which is an octopus cooked inside a cylinder with many things. And honestly, when I sent the recipe to the other guys, I didn't expect them to be that surprised, because I said, okay, octopus is going to be easy to come up with different ideas and that sort of stuff. But in fact, it was not, because octopus seems to be a bad beast, rather difficult to cook. All the chefs will tell you that even if you have an octopus day after day, an octopus that is being fished by the same fisherman in the same water, in the same area, every octopus is different. Every octopus needs a different kind of cooking. It doesn't cook with the same amount of time. It deserves a special attention. And really, if I may say so, this octopus put most of the chefs in a big shit. For example, I heard that Kobe Desramult has been buying in his restaurant at least 50 kilos of octopus to do research, and he was still looking last week. And Magnus Nilsson, Magnus is probably the first one to send his recipe, the first one to react. He's very smart, very clever, very, very organized. He's a Swedish guy, he's very concentrated and very focused. And I noticed that he was not answering. And then, after a whole month of silence, he basically said, listen, guys, I never cooked octopus. I don't really know how to start. And so he said, please allow me for once to be late with my recipe. Okay, Magnus, take your time. And yesterday night I was having dinner with Magnus, and I said, finally, how much time did it take to come up with your recipe? Almost 2 months. And how many kilos of octopus did you buy to come up with this recipe? I was still looking last week and still doing some research, but basically I had bought 200 kilos of octopus. Every week I had a delivery of 50 kilos of octopus, and every week I was working on that. And I can show you that all my people, all the waiters, all the staff at the restaurant, they have been eating octopus every day since last month.
I have to get a word in it before we go. Listeners, we are hoping, but only hoping, that we're going to be able to report directly from the 25 varieties of octopus. So watch this space for more information if we can manage to get there. Thank you so much, Andrea, for talking to us today here on the menu, and it sounds like so much fun.
Thanks to you.
And we'll have more from Peru and Mistura and the Culinary Symposium next week.
I need to put in.
You do?
One
okay,
thing.
Well, be quick.
We forgot to mention the dancing potato.
Oh, well you can talk more about the dancing potato and the dancing red pepper next week. So be sure not to miss next week's program. We hope you enjoyed this week's program, and you'll join us again same time, same place next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.